Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 18th of April, recording at 8:58 p.m., and that's British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first a quick review of the week, and I must apologize for the very nasal tones as the head cold persists, but so will I with this audio, hopefully. Now, first, in terms of stock markets, you may recall that exactly a week ago, Wall Street ended the week with that big downward dynamic indicating that it was encountering resistance, no doubt some short covering, up near the February and March highs. Well, most of the stock markets that were in overall ranging patterns, let alone testing the higher side of those ranges, encountered support on Monday and Tuesday, or established lows on Monday or Tuesday, and have subsequently rallied here pretty much every day, including today. Now, just a quick wrap on today's action. It was a bit mixed in Asia, with China down a bit, and Australia down. But just to say, it was mixed action. Nothing dramatic taking place in Asia. But we did see steadier action here in Europe with some pretty good gains, mostly over 2%, and we had Switzerland up over 3%, and that's telling us that the financial shares have bounced back here again today. Now, Wall Street is closing out near the highs of the day, and we've got some pretty solid gains. The Dow is, the gains are not quite as strong as in Europe, with the exception of the NASDAQ, which has pretty much led the way. The NASDAQ composite is up 2.6% as I speak, and the Dow and the S&P are up 1.8% just before the close. Okay, also during the week, we've seen long-dated government bond prices ease across the boards. The U.S. dollar had been weak early in the week, had quite a good rebound today, although it's halved those gains subsequently, but it's still in that range, albeit near the lower side of that trading range, and not far from the historic lows, of course. Well, the historic lows have just been in the last few weeks. For the U.S. dollar index, that is, but that's also true in terms of highs in a number of instances, with the euro nearly reaching that 160 level, for instance, against the greenback. For instance, it got up to 159.56 at one stage today before falling sharply back to 157.12, currently at 158.08. Now, that dollar rally, plus maybe a little bit of fatigue following some strength in the precious metals markets earlier in the week, modest rallies, led to some chunky downward dynamics here today by gold and silver, but they too are both well off the lows. Gold's currently down just over $20. It was down, good deal more at one stage. Bullion's currently down 918. It did have a low at 905.70. Now, industrial metals have had a mixed week here overall as far as copper is concerned. Copper was hitting new highs, just barely testing new all-time highs, but then backing away. Backed away yesterday, and it's a little lower here today, but off the lows. The strong ones have been, it's really tin that's been leading the way, but aluminium has been pretty firm here as well. And crude oil has been hitting records almost on a daily basis, including today. Got up to a high of 116.93, and it's only slightly below that right now. So up nearly $2 today. And natural gas is pretty firm as well, up 250 ticks to 10.63. So, and foods here today, a bit mixed action, but maybe a little bit more profit taking than buying. Okay. So what's going on here overall? First, with these stock markets. My feeling, as you know, is that we had seen a lot of very climactic evidence, and that really started in January, with the big sell-off that we saw culminating in the 22nd of January, prompting the Fed to really make some begin some dramatic rate cuts here in an effort to catch up with the curve of events, which they didn't really do until well into March, when they moved in to stem the weakness that we were seeing and to bolster confidence in the financial sector. And that has gradually met with some increased success. I've been of the view that this was an overall bottoming out and base building process for most stock markets. There are some dramatic extremes ranging from China, perhaps the most important market, continuing to underperform by a wide margin. But also, we've seen some very thin markets which had moved upwards on weight of money as several funds really created self-feeding moves. I'm thinking of the Eastern European Baltic indices, which had done so exceptionally well up until their highs last year. But then have been unwinding those moves in even more dramatic fashion subsequently. The evidence that we're seeing today, though, first, Wall Street is being led higher by the transports. That's been the case really for several months now. And also the NASDAQ index is doing extremely well, and the NASDAQ is above its February and March highs. And it had pulled back to those levels late last week, but has bounced off them very, very well. So overall, this activity continues to look, for the most part, like ranging support development, base formation development. In other words, that's positive, suggesting that markets are past the worst and that we're in a recovery phase of an unspecified duration. Now, within Asia, we have quite a degree of variation. I mentioned China, and Vietnam's been even weaker. But as of today's decline, China's hit the 50% level on this downward move, and we're getting subtle moves from the monetary authorities in China to not try to draw a line under it yet, although I wouldn't be surprised if they do that or hope that that happens near the 3,000 level for the Shanghai A-share and composite indices. But they've been introducing measures to slow the rate of new issues, so to reduce the supply somewhat. They've been approving more state-run funds, giving them leeway to invest in the stock market, measures of that type to curb supply a little bit and to increase demand. That's an interesting development, particularly for markets that are down 50%. Makes me feel that they're quite near the bottom, although we don't have the technical confirmation of that at this stage. But as I say, that 3,000 level now stands out in my mind. Then at the other extreme, we have Taiwan, which has been one of the leaders in Asia recently. And that's interesting for two reasons. The lesser of the reasons is that Taiwan is known for being overweight in technology, in overweight technology companies. And that should stand in its favor during a stock market recovery. That strength that we see in the NASDAQ index justifies a better than average performance by Taiwan on its own. But the really big story is, of course, political, and this may well be, well, this is groundbreaking stuff. We've had an election that has brought in a new government that is much more friendly towards development of relationships with mainland China, moving closer to mainland China, which is reciprocated by apparently removing a lot of the, I read in one report, 1,400 missiles that were pointing from the mainland towards towards Taiwan. Even more importantly, in commercial terms, Taiwan banks are now allowed to open on the mainland, and are given more freedom to do so than banks from other regions or countries. So, as I say, this really is a groundbreaking development here, and Taiwan has to be a top candidate to be a big outperformer over the next 12 months or more. And then there's Japan, which has interesting valuations, as you know, but we have this sclerotic government. They need another Koizumi, don't they? But are unlikely to find one in a hurry, I fear. And therefore, I suspect that Japan is slow burn on the recovery. In other words, it'll take time. But with valuations down at these levels, and with shares or companies rather increasing their share buybacks, I think Japan is definitely in an accumulation zone. But you will probably have to be patient. In other words, we could have a base formation development that takes some time. Now, many investors won't mind that, particularly if they're picking up some extremely undervalued and reasonably attractive companies in terms of yield. But I think what I'm saying is that yes, Japan's cheap, but we'll have to remain patient for a while longer, and that will apply to a lot of markets. After all, we did have a quite dramatic fundamental change emanating from Wall Street's financial sector that's led to slower global GDP growth, and I've often said we would see a long convalescence from that. But net it all out, and this is a time to buy rather than sell, and the risks are much, much lower today than they were a year ago. Now, when the banking crisis was just beginning to become known, but bank shares were still up near their highs. As far as oh, another market that I want to mention in that region, and take a little drink of water Thailand. Thailand's been such a wallflower because of its ridiculous political problems leading to bad governance. But that seems to be improving. One can't be sure about this new government, but what we do know is that Thailand is another cheap market that is quite attractive, not least because of its food exports. Thailand, for instance, is the world's largest exporter of rice. And rice has certainly been in the news recently, as you will realize. Now, looking at the European stock markets, we've got the slow growth story, but we do see the base building activity. The ECB hasn't been cutting interest rates, but it has certainly been pumping in plenty of money and making plenty of money available to help ease the banking problems. The UK economy is quite weak overall, but it similarly has been addressing the banking problems. So it all looks like base building and a process of convalescence prior to steadier stock market action overall, and ditto in the United States, led by transports and the NASDAQ among the major indices, but very much an economy of two halves, the weak domestic sector and the much, much stronger international sector. And that's a point I've been making all along. And the charts show this up quite clearly. So you get big leaders such as Walmart doing extremely well, IBM doing exceptionally well, and all the big international, well-run multinational companies, for the most part, have recovering chart patterns, and I think we can expect further gains over the next few months from those shares. Now, what we're not going to see, I feel, is a return of the nice Goldilocks days that we saw really from 2003 into certainly into the first quarter of 2007. Why aren't we going to see that? Well, the long-term inflation cycle that I have forecast, I've been forecasting it throughout this entire decade, saying when people were talking about a deflationary collapse, and you remember that most of you will remember that that was quite a fashionable view back during the bear market and the latter bear market phase and support building phase in 2001, 2002, 2003. And it actually continued. People are still saying that well into 2004, that deflation was the real problem. That was almost a consensus. Well, I think it was a consensus view. Now, I have argued throughout that that was wrong, that of course there were deflationary pockets, and one of the main deflationary pockets was caused by globalization, which led to the most intense competition in manufacturing, and that was helping to keep wages down. But I also argued that we were in the early stages of a new inflationary cycle because the Fed and other central banks were pumping in money like mad, and they were really doing so from the Asian financial crisis in that 1997, 98 period onwards, right on up through the long-term capital mismanagement collapse, the Russian debt default, the Y2K paranoia, 9/11, the NASDAQ bubble. So they've been pumping and pumping and pumping to avoid that deflation that so many analysts were forecasting. And you remember Ben Bernanke's helicopter speech and deflation, why we won't let it happen here. I'll just complete by saying that they were the monetary officials were certainly intent on avoiding that and erring on the side of inflation. And they continued to err on the side of inflation and felt they could get away with it because of globalization and those competitive pressures in manufacturing. And we have seen a different type of inflationary cycle, again predictable. This one's been led by resources. That's the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme that we've been talking about for a number of years now, and that actually continues, but inevitably that spills over into wage inflation, particularly when global GDP growth picks up again. But it also rears its head if we get food price inflation and other cost of living increases that are energy inflation. We've plenty of energy inflation. And when that's hitting front page headlines pretty well every week, then inevitably we see increases in wage pressure. So that's the environment that we face. Now, it's certainly not the end of the world. We have had plenty of, there's always something to worry about. There's always a wall of worry. I talked a bit about that in my leader item yesterday. And at least we're not worrying about SARS, AIDS, or bird flu right now, but a good many people are worrying about global warming. So there's, I say, there are always plenty of things to worry about. They're worried about food shortages and food riots and energy shortages and soaring prices. And I think that the real known problems, global warming is something that we can't ignore, but nobody knows exactly how serious that is or what the time scale is. It's a controversial item, in other words. But what is real and here and now are the food shortages and the surging energy prices. And I don't really see that going away. So again, I use that term that none of us like very much, but it does accurately describe the situation, that Goldilocks environment that people talked about it at such length, not too hot, not too cold, but just right in terms of the economic factors. We certainly don't have that. So this is a brave new world of resources inflation and now some wage pressure. There's some stagflation as well because a number of economies are weak, and that's not so good for corporate profits. But again, there's plenty of liquidity sloshing around the system. But what it means, of course, is that all markets will not be equal, and or all companies' prospects will certainly not be equal. But any company that has a strong global market share and pricing power is on a roll. So we're seeing the we're seeing them led, of course, by food companies and also the industrial mining shares. And food companies have almost certainly run ahead a little bit too quickly in the short term, but they still remain in very strong uptrends, and I think it's going to remain a hot sector really for quite some time. So I think overall it's not that bad an environment for fuller money themes. Resources are doing extremely well. Some of the Asian emerging markets are doing quite well. Others are not, notably China, but India hasn't done that well either. But I suspect that both are in buying ranges right now. Government bonds have weakened noticeably this week. And you know my forecast on this, well, I'll repeat it for anyone who doesn't, not least new subscribers who are coming in every day, that I've always said that bonds were taking their cue in this environment from stock markets. And we've had the flight to quality into bonds, and we had buying of the bonds because of so-called flight to quality. I don't regard these as quality. We've had the recession fears buying, and we've had talk of, well, I was going to say talk of deflation, although I know we don't hear all that much of that again these days. But the main thing is people have parked a lot of money in the long-dated government bonds, and the yields are just unattractive. And we had seen the 30-year Treasury bond yield get down to 4.4% not that long ago. The 10-year yield for U.S. Treasuries got down to 3.3% just over a month ago. And that's ridiculous against the background of the inflation that we're actually seeing. Now, as far as that inflation cycle is concerned, it's not exponential. What we, in other words, it's not going to look like a chart of the rice price action in recent months. What we will see is a surge of inflation, then we'll see a correction, and then it'll pick up again from a higher level. That's the type of environment I s expect to see. How can that be in terms of the reported statistics? Well, I don't think we're going back to cheap food prices anytime soon, but if food prices just were to level out for a year, on average, some will be moving up and some will be moving down, of course, in line with consumption trends and particularly supply trends, which will be heavily influenced by weather trends. But my point is that while we're seeing a lot of food inflation in the statistics right now, and that will continue for some months, a year from now, if prices overall stay at comparatively high levels, that will look flat in terms of the annual reporting, year-on-year reporting of inflation data. But it's a more challenging environment overall, for sure, than what we had seen in that nice period from 2003 into 2000, early 2007. So we have to expect some more choppy action from time to time. There'll be some underperformers. The resources themes should continue to do well. We may get more volatility than previously. I would prepare myself to expect that. But there'll certainly be plenty of opportunities, and this is one of those opportunities here right now. Valuations are better than we've seen since at least 2004 and earlier in some instances. Going back to those bonds, which I hadn't quite finished there, saying that the valuations are terrible and yields will back up over time, particularly as stock markets recover. In terms of energy prices, again, this is very much a secular bull market overall. It's been fashionable to say that these higher prices are mostly due to speculation, and inevitably, there is speculation in the commodities sector overall. But that's not the big driving force on the upside that some people actually think. Over the longer term, it tends to curb peak-to-trough extremes. In other words, any of those hedge funds that go in buying crude oil, for instance, or other institutional investors who buy it are only buying it to sell it later on. And so while they might temporarily shorten the or reduce the supply, they will increase it as profits are eventually taken or losses cut, depending on what price action has actually occurred. I think the point I'm trying to make is that it's not so much speculation that's producing these moves, but a genuine difficulty on the part of the suppliers to match the current and rising demand. And that's a problem that I think is going to really continue for quite some time. Again, it's not the end of the world. A lot depends on how it plays out. If the price of crude oil were to move up two or couple of dollars every month, for instance, that's not so bad. What would cause problems would be the dramatic spike. We won't get a dramatic spike without some sort of major, major disruption to supply. I feel hopefully that won't happen, although it's always a possibility. But suffice it to say, when we see surging energy prices, that creates a headwind for stock markets, and it creates problems for industry, it creates problems for consumers, and it creates even bigger surpluses for the producing countries. And part of the energy story is that the producers of the energy, the Middle East, Russia, Venezuela, they're consuming a great deal more of their energy today than they were 2 or 3 years ago. And that's hardly surprising, but it's something that we don't see much comment on. Briefly on the foods, while the voice is still, well, almost holding, and I think rice, which is currently front page, a front page news item because of its parabolic rise, well, that's an accelerating trend. It's a type one ending, as taught at the chart seminar. So we're in the latter stages, the climactic stage of this particular move, and then that will spill over into a medium-term correction, as we've seen with many of the other foods. But we really should expect, I would not expect more on the downside beyond some pretty big, volatile medium-term corrections. I maintain that virtually all these resources are in secular bull markets. But as I say, they are not exponential in terms of their upside moves, or at least not for very long. The action will be plenty choppy. That will create some excitement and indeed some opportunities. I should mention the precious metals. Here, I still think we're in a corrective phase, but also within their secular bull market. And in the industrial metals, I do think that there's more to go for on the upside than downside. And that's it for another week, and quite an exciting week, and quite a good one here with stock markets in Europe and Wall Street closing out with some very, very solid gains on the week. So, enjoy your weekend, all the best, and would it be interesting to see what happens next week? All the best.